Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. For the first time, the EPA has created a proposal to limit carbon emissions created by power plants in an effort to protect the health of future generations. The proposal sets targets for each state and provides room for local solutions. Now the EPA is seeking comment on what can be achieved. Today, a conversation about these very controversial new standards. With us today, Joe Spies is a legislative chair for the Kansas Sierra Club. He's also CEO of Wind So High. That's an Overland Park renewable energy company. Joe, nice to have you. Welcome to Up to Date.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me.
Trey Davis is also with us. He's the board president for the Missouri Energy Development Association. That's an association of Missouri's investor-owned utilities and their partners. Trey, thanks for taking time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is John Hummel. He's policy director for Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. And John, welcome to you, too.
Thank you for having me.
Well, John, we've only got you for a little while here. What do you make of this plan? What's the impact going to be on Kansas, at least from your perspective, John?
Well, in some ways, that's still a an examination that we're conducting. As you know, that plan
yes.
is over 650 pages.
Yes.
So our experts at health and environment are still sifting through that to determine the impact. But as you probably heard from comments from the governor,
yes.
he's very concerned that this rule disproportionately impacts Midwestern states that still rely very heavily on coal. If you look at some numbers that have come out recently from the Kansas Corporation Commission on what these sorts of regulations have cost Kansans so far, it's pretty alarming. There's a statistic that says that Kansans pay over $227 million a year more for the regulations that have been in place so far since 2007. And that's an increase of about 9.4% on the Kansas utility bills. So as the governor tries to make Kansas the best place in America to live and to grow a family and to start a small business, raising the cost of living for all those folks or the cost of doing business for those folks with higher utility rates is not a particularly
yeah.
helpful thing at this time for us.
You know, Joe Spies with the Kansas Sierra Club, you know, I want to get your reaction to that. And I was going to get into this during our conversation today. There's so much disagreement over whether these new regs are going to, you know, cost consumers more or not. What's your take on that?
Actually, we look at this as an opportunity for the economy to expand without creating any increased costs. If you're replacing some of the coal power with wind power and energy storage, for example, let's look at this wind corridor in the Great Plains states from North Dakota through Texas. Wind power produced in these states is some of the cheapest electricity anywhere that we have. If you combine that wind power with energy storage, you're still creating an electricity price that is going to be comparable to coal power, natural gas power, if not even cheaper. So we see this as an opportunity to expand the development of those things and not affect rates at all.
That's interesting. Trey Davis, let's jump the state line and go to Missouri. You're with the Missouri Energy Development Association. The impact on Missouri will be what, Trey?
Well, I think like the gentleman from Kansas says, that it's still to be determined. All of our companies are assessing that information right now, and we have an initial 120-day period to make those assessments. I think, you know, we're going to do everything in our power to work within those rules to benefit the citizens of our state, but I do think there is a concern about the impact on cost. In our state, we're primarily an 80% coal state. We have a lot of other diversity as well, but as you look towards minimizing one of your fuel mixes and then bringing in others, yes, there is an opportunity, but the timing and the flexibility is the challenge with
yeah.
any type of rule like this. You know, we say that we don't want to build any more coal in the future. Well, we're going to switch to natural gas. Okay, what happens down the road if there's a petroleum issue like we had back in the 70s? So I think, you know, we're looking at this and how can we comply, but also how can we balance our current fuel mix, which allows us to have some of the lowest rates in the country,
yeah.
and yet, you know, follow these new regulations and still minimize that cost on consumers, because at the end of the day, that's the most important factor we're looking out for.
You know, John Hummel, again, with Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, when you hear Joe Spies from the Sierra Club say there's at least a possibility of actually lowering rates, do you regard that as a pipe dream, or what do you make of that?
I think it's a difficult conclusion to reach based on what we know so far. I've seen estimates attributed to the EPA that says that they believe that the cost on this and the energy industry will be somewhere between $7.3 and $8.8 billion. So I think even the EPA would recognize there's a cost to be paid there. Now, they argue that the savings that you would receive from some of the health outcomes would offset that cost. I'd probably surprise Joe here a little bit and say that I largely agree with where he wants to go. The governor has been very supportive of wind. He personally negotiated a deal to bring the largest wind farm in Kansas history to South Central Kansas, which is Flat Ridge 2, a BP wind project. We would love for the wind prices to be at the same price or cheaper than coal or natural gas. That has not happened yet. It's gotten closer over time, and we're hopeful that will continue to happen. And honestly, another issue that we're having, the governor would love, you know, we doubled the amount of installed wind in the last couple of years in Kansas, and the governor would love to keep that momentum going. But another federal mandate that we've received from the federal government, Fish and Wildlife Service has now our Kansas wind developers very worried that they won't be able to continue to develop wind in Kansas with the listing of the lesser prairie chicken. So it's a little bit frustrating if you're in our shoes and you have one government agency telling you need to transition faster to wind, and then you have another government agency making that more difficult for you.
Joe Spies with the Kansas Sierra Club. Are there too many regs out there? Is the federal government getting too involved here and sort of mucking up the works a little bit?
Not really. We're facing one of the most serious problems we've ever faced through climate change. And the other cost that isn't being discussed much in the media, because it's very difficult to understand, is related to the healthcare costs of burning coal. The Harvard Medical School study and a separate study by the National Academy of Sciences, done independent of the Harvard study, concluded that the healthcare costs of burning coal amount to hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Mm-hmm. And if those are included in people's electric bills, our electric bills go up by as much as 17 cents per kilowatt hour. So what we're seeing right now is a gigantic subsidy that has been going to the coal industry that hasn't been recognized. The EPA carbon plan is going to begin to help us recognize that there are opportunities and options to replace that really expensive coal power with cheaper energy sources like wind power and wind power with energy storage.
Yeah. You know, Trey Davis, again, with the Missouri Energy Development Association. You know, whether or not you agree with this exact proposal from the president, I mean, a lot of folks seem to have come down on the idea that, you know, we've got to do something. I'm just wondering, what about that? What, in your view, should be happening if it's not this plan, Trey?
Well, I'll answer that with telling you a little bit about what is happening, what
yeah.
has happened, because I think that sometimes gets lost in the discussion as well. And, you know, if we initially just look at nationally, the U.S. fleet, you know, in the last number of years has invested $90 billion in transitioning to a cleaner generating fleet and enhancing our grid. You know, infrastructure is key. And when we're looking at a state like Missouri, you know, the companies that I represent, the three electric utilities in Missouri, have invested over $2.5 billion in the last number of years to reduce emission controls. They're leading the way in developing new wind technologies and accessing wind resources and bringing that power into Missouri. The utility-scale solar that our companies are investing in, both Kansas City Power and Light, Ameren, Missouri, is unprecedented in this state.
Mm-hmm.
And also something that's being lost when we're talking about reducing emissions is also how do we reduce consumption. And energy efficiency has been a key resource that we have worked with our customers to help educate and to help work with them on consumption. Ameren, Missouri, for example, in the last year invested $150 million in energy efficiency. Kansas City Power and Light just came out this past week announcing that they're going to be offering their energy efficiency opportunities to their entire customer base,
yeah,
which they're estimating is going to save 36 million kilowatt hours of electricity. So I think you have to understand what is being done now to prepare for the future. And I think you continue these type of investments. That's what we're seeing in Missouri. How can we expand upon our hydro, our solar, our wind, energy efficiency? Landfill gas is something that's being done in St. Joseph. It's being done in St. Louis. We also have great access to nuclear in this state, not only what's happening in Kansas, but what's also happening in Missouri at the Callaway plant. So you have some great opportunities. And even if I may just kind of wrap up the comment here, is one of the things that we did notice in our initial analysis of this EPA regulation is they do identify the significance of nuclear, that it is a clean, renewable resource. And they're looking at ways of how can you build that into your portfolio moving forward. Now there is the challenge. How do we do that when there seemed to be, you know, almost a ban on building new nuclear? So that's the challenge with these technologies moving forward.
And Trey, I guess the argument would be, and you've outlined the fact that a lot of money is being spent by these different utilities. The question is enough changing quickly enough? You've mentioned Ameren a couple of times, and you know this as well as I do. There was a study out last year by Environment America that said, you know, one of Ameren's plants is the fourth dirtiest in the country. It's the Labadie plant in Labadie, Missouri, if I'm saying that right. It pours as much CO2 into the air as 3.9 million cars a year. And that's pretty heavy stuff.
Well, that's one person's and one group's perspective. I think looking at a company like Ameren, they've reduced their impact 75% below the EPA standards. When you look nationally at what's going on, U.S. sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide emissions have been cut by 75% since 1990. CO2 emissions are down 15% since 2005. The challenge with continuing to follow the regulation upon regulation is how do you do that in a timely fashion, and how do you do that with minimizing the cost on the customer? Everybody says do more, do it faster.
Yeah.
Are you willing to pay for it? There's the challenge and the crux of the problem that we have to address moving forward. We're all in on moving forward for, you know, cleaner, more reliable power sources. But in doing that, you have to minimize the cost on the consumer.
Let me go back to Joe Spies here from the Kansas Sierra Club. I mean, the issue that Trey has raised is a great one, which is how much are consumers willing to pay to help offset these emissions? And has the time come where we've simply all got to buck up and pay a little more to deal with our environment?
I just don't see that happening. And first, I want to address something that he said about the timeline. What the EPA has done is created a plan with great flexibility so that each state can choose from a number of options: energy efficiency, improving the heat rates and the waste heat efficiency at coal plant. There are a number of things that can be done to achieve these goals that were set by the EPA over a number of years. The final goal doesn't have to be realized until 2030. So we have some time for everybody, including the utility industry, to put together an effective plan. Now, we think that, and I'm going to refer to a report issued by the Chamber of Commerce on costs. Every time that the EPA has come up with a proposal to clean up our air and water, the Chamber has issued dire warnings, these hysterical rants that claim that our economy is doomed, and every time they've been wrong. Every time they've been wrong, from the acid rain protections of 1990, smog reduction in 1997, mercury in 2011, they've claimed it's going to lead to massive job losses and increased prices, and it just hasn't happened. So I think we're going to see the same thing here. I just don't see how, if we are smart about our use of the options listed by the EPA, that's going to affect prices at all. I see them remaining the same, possibly dropping nationally, if we're thinking nationally here.
John Hummel with Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. I know you have to leave in just a second. Before you go, just address what Joe was talking about there, this notion that states have this flexibility to deal with these new standards. How is Governor Brownback going to formulate a way forward here for Kansas?
Well, actually, as Trey was talking about, in our eyes, the way forward started many years ago, and a federal mandate from the EPA is quite unnecessary. If you look at the statistics from Kansas, you'll see that we've reduced CO2 emissions since 2005 by 19%. Hmm. Like I said, we've doubled the amount of installed wind. The governor, this last legislative session, signed legislation on energy efficiency modeled after the Missouri policy. He signed a bill on net metering. He signed a bill instructing the KDHE secretary to move forward with common sense solutions for CO2 reductions that doesn't cause economic harm.
Right.
So we feel like we're already well down this road. We'll continue to do what we need to do to make the air clean for the citizens of Kansas. But we don't need federal mandates that push us and impose solutions that don't work for us. If you put yourself in the governor's shoes, he's now trying to go out to other countries and other states and attract businesses to Kansas, and now they're worried about the cost this is gonna have on their business if they move here.
Right.
And that puts us at a disadvantage. And when your main priority of your administration is to grow the economy, that's a huge concern.
John, are you suggesting that meeting the new requirements, reducing emissions by the roughly 25% that's called for here in the next 15 years, is that going to be fairly easy for Kansas to accomplish? Is that what you're saying here?
Well, as is true in all these things, the devil's in the details. We believe that we've already gone a long ways to meet this.
Right.
But it will all depend on how some of those things are counted, and we won't know exactly how all that works out until things get flushed out a little bit more. An example of that is a lot of the wind that we produce in Kansas gets shipped out to other states. So who gets credit for the wind? Historically, we've gotten credit for that wind. But if we're sending that to Missouri, and we do some, Missouri would probably also like to take credit for purchasing that wind. So there's a lot of those things that we'll have to sort through, and we won't really know the impact until we get the answers to some of those questions.
John Hummel, Policy Director for Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. I want to be respectful of your time. Thank you for taking some time with us today, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
You bet. Let's go to some phone calls here. We're talking about the new EPA standards that President Obama just talked about and issued a few days ago. 816-235-2888 is our number here today. Are you willing to pay more to ensure that these goals are met in 15 years down the road? 816-235-2888. Let's go to Lori from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I appreciate this discussion very much. I think our climate is in such dire condition right now that we need to do as much as we can, as quickly as we can, to mitigate what's already started to happen. And if we do not do that, our electricity rates are going to be a minor inconvenience when we think of the cost to us in our property costs as we suffer from more severe weather-related incidences. Our food's going to cost so much more. It's already going up because of climate changes. And there's just huge costs other than electricity bills or utility bills that we need to consider in this discussion. So I say we need to do what we can as soon as we can.
All right, Lori. I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can reach us by email, uptodate@kcur.org, or tweet us @kcuruptodate. Let's go to Ann from Kansas City, Missouri. Ann, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This was a great show. Thanks for bringing up the topic. The question I have is about the impact of solutions such as renewables and energy efficiency on the local economies. You know, when we use coal to generate electricity, the money spent for coal all goes to Wyoming because that's where our coal comes from. And I'd like to have your guests comment on the impact to the local economy of creating electricity through energy efficiency and renewables.
Trey Davis with the Missouri Energy Development Association addressed this notion of our money getting shipped off to Wyoming and the impact that might be having on us.
Well, I respect the comment. I think what also has to be remembered there is of the dozens of coal plants that reside in Kansas and Missouri, there's hundreds of individuals that work in those plants that do business in the community, that buy insurance, but go to the grocery, go out to eat. And those plants run 24/7, 365 days a year. There's no downtime there. So you have a constant influx of economic things happening in your community. And I don't think we can forget that. Now, I do agree. Yes, there is a local impact to the economy with the emergence of renewables. And I think that's something we're seeing in all the communities that we work in, whether we're building utility-scale solar or we're offering, in the past, as we have, solar rebates in Missouri to those that are installing solar on the roofs. Those are employing businesses that are working in those communities. When we're buying wind or installing wind somewhere, you know, that works with companies like Joe's and others. So I think you just have to remember that there is a balance, and if we all of a sudden just go to shut down coal plants, that is going to impact your economy and the folks that work there.
Yeah, Joe, hop in here.
Yeah, if you look at what's going to happen through energy conservation, energy efficiency programs where you're employing people who are installing energy-efficient windows, greater insulation in homes, energy-efficient doors. This is going to go on forever. You're going to create, and this is what we've discovered already in the states who have these programs in place. This is creating jobs. It's lowering costs for people, especially in the middle and lower-income areas, where that really helps the economy, because if they are not paying money into their energy bills, they have more money for food and clothing, mm-hmm. education, and things like that are critically important. The same thing when you look at the development of wind power. If we combine wind power with energy storage, this is going to create millions of jobs in this country, because we will reestablish a manufacturing base here for wind turbines that is going to far exceed anything that employed in the coal industry right now. And I have one extremely important point to make about the coal industry and jobs in its future.
Yeah.
We're on the threshold of the most exciting new industry in this country related to coal, and it involves the production of new materials, graphene, carbon nanotubes, and carbon fiber.
What is all that?
These graphene is going to be the most important new material going forward. It has the potential to increase computer processing speeds exponentially, because it's a far superior source of chips and processing than silicon. This is going to be a $1 trillion industry, and it starts with coal. You're talking about one atom thick layers of carbon that begin with coal. The same thing with carbon nanotubes and carbon fiber.
Meaning this is a new way to use coal, Joe? Is
yes.
that what you're talking about?
And it doesn't involve combustion. You just use coal to create these new materials. So in my opinion, the coal industry is going to be far more profitable than it ever has going forward if we start moving now to develop these new materials. And they already exist.
It's a cleaner way of burning coal.
There's no coal burned at all.
Yeah.
There's
mm-hmm.
no, you don't burn it. That's the advantage. You're just slicing off pieces of raw coal to create these one atom thick layers. And then you build your materials that way. They are the most amazing materials we will have. So we don't have to feel sorry for the coal industry going forward. And at the same time, we can create millions of new jobs from manufacturing wind turbine components and energy storage along with it.
Trey Davis, are you as bullish on this new technology as Joe is?
I would probably say no, just because I don't think I'm familiar with it as Joe is. But he speaks with eloquence, so I enjoy that. I think the challenge with new technologies, and he brought up battery storage, and once again, I'm not on this program to go against what Joe is saying or to, you know, fight any of the environmental groups. I think what we have to look at as an industry and all stakeholders is, as we develop these technologies, what's the time that it's going to take to really put them into service? And what's the cost going to be? I mean, I think the challenge that we've seen with renewables right now, and I'm not trying to say this is a negative, is the cost to put them into service and what that delivers to the customers is not as competitive as we need it to be right now when you compare it with coal or other alternatives. So I think you have to look at how can you phase those in a proper way to meet your guidelines and to minimize cost impact on customers. And I think we're all working to try to do that. But that timing and that cost impact is really the challenge there, because just flipping the switch tomorrow and changing our fuel diversity and expecting everything to be just peachy and everything's going to run fine is just not realistic. So I think that's why we have to be very pragmatic when we look at these regulations and how do we build them into our current portfolio, how do we then work that transition properly and effectively so we minimize that cost and still maintain reliability? Because at the end of the day, you know, no matter, you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time, the sun doesn't shine all the time. We always hear that. But the expectations of consumers, every one of us, we want that power yesterday, today, and the next moment I flip my switch.
Yeah.
And so we always have to keep that in mind as we build a diverse portfolio to make sure we're meeting expectations and reliability and affordability.
Joe?
Well, I don't mean to pick on Trey. Let's do some math here. Power purchase agreements for wind power in Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and Nebraska are going for 2 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour in that range. Now, you can add compressed air energy storage costs to those prices, and it adds, if you look at the capital cost of wind project, to keep the math simple, to say $1 billion for a 500-megawatt project, just less than that, but for math's illustration's sake here, $1 billion, you add the compressed air energy storage plant necessary to turn that wind power into baseload power, it only adds 30 or so percent to that cost. If you're adding 30% to 2 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour, you're still coming up at a price of electricity that is really below the true cost of coal power, natural gas power, and nuclear power. That's why I'm saying we can easily convert wind power into baseload power to completely replace coal power and not affect rates, and in the process, create millions of jobs in this country. So it is possible to do.
We're talking this morning about President Obama's proposal to limit carbon emissions created by power plants. Your comments welcome. The question on the table is, are you willing to pay more to ensure that these emission standards are met? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's turn our conversation a little bit to wind and how ready is the wind industry to take on this heavier responsibility going forward. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about these new EPA standards to limit carbon emissions from power plants. We're visiting with Joe Spietz. He's with the Kansas Sierra Club, and Trey Davis with the Missouri Energy Development Association. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. I want to begin our second half, Trey, by talking about wind. I want to go to a comment that one of our emailers, Andrew, raises here. He says this: there's no good way to store wind energy and no prospect for doing so on the horizon. Thus, he says, wind energy is one of the most expensive types of energy, not the cheapest. Is he right or not?
Well, I think it's all about where you're getting the resource and how you're building it into your mix, as I've discussed before. I think, you know, our electric industry, looking at it nationally, we have built 21 gigawatts of wind in the last 3 years alone, mixing that also with the utility-scale solar that I've talked about.
Yeah.
Kansas City Power and Light has almost 150 megawatts of wind and also purchases wind from other sources, bringing it in into Missouri. Empire District Electric Company down in southwest Missouri, 15% of their total resources come from wind. Ameren has put over 100 megawatts of wind into their generating portfolio. So I think the key is, you know, hopefully with some of these renewable resources, as the cost begins to go down, if it truly does, and the industries are able to be competitive in terms of the prices, then I think you'll see that resource possibly increase into the mix. You'll see that through regulation, but you'll also just see it through the basic economics. If that cost is competitive and it can minimize the cost for the customer, you will see those resources mix into the fuel mix more and more. I think why you may not have seen them in other states or with other providers is just because in certain areas they may not have the access to the wind. You know, not as many places are blessed as Kansas is with the wind capabilities that they have. Very different on the East Coast, very different on the West Coast. So I think you just have to look at where does that resource make sense, where is it financially achievable to build into your mix, and then how do you minimize that cost.
But Joe Spies with Kansas Sierra Club, you can't store wind energy. How big of a problem is it, or is it a problem?
Well, it's not a problem at all, because you can, and that's what compressed air energy storage does. This is an established technology. There are two compressed air energy storage plants that have been running successfully for decades, one in Germany since 1978, and it's a big plant. It's 290 megawatts, and one in Alabama since 1991, and it's a 110-megawatt plant. The concept is this. You use wind power at night to power huge compressors that pressurize air that you inject into natural geologic formations, like depleted gas wells or salt domes, and we have those in abundance in the central part of the country. Then during the day, if the wind isn't blowing, you release that pressurized air. It blasts through, it's a combustion turbine. Just think of a modified steam turbine or a jet engine fan.
Yeah.
It spins it. And you make electricity. This is completely clean. It is super cheap. It is highly reliable.
Well, if it's so cheap and Kansas is such a great wind energy state, Joe, why aren't one of these plants in Kansas?
Well, we're just now getting to the point of developing these projects. The projects are in process, and it is going to happen. There are new compressed air energy storage plants under construction in Texas right now, some in Ireland. It's taken a while for the market forces needed to encourage the redevelopment of this technology, since it already exists. But it is going to revolutionize the energy industry because it's so cheap and clean.
How well positioned, Joe, is the wind industry to pick up the slack here that's going to be created, the demand created by these new regulations from the Obama administration?
We could produce enough baseload wind power. If you look at the wind corridor in the Plain States from North Dakota to Texas, we could produce enough baseload power to power the entire country at rates that would not increase rates for anybody around the country. It would lead to the creation of millions of jobs here. We are ready. And this,
how many turbines would we need to do something like that, Joe?
It would be massive. But when you stop to think about this, it would be these plants would be developed on working farm and ranch land. The farmers and ranchers need this. They've been taking it from the crop damage losses as a result of drought related to climate change.
Yeah.
They need new sources of revenue to keep them afloat during this time of crisis.
But it's happening, but not that quickly, though, right?
No, but it could easily get there because energy storage solves that problem of integrating wind into the grid.
How far away are we from getting this new energy storage technology in Kansas or Missouri?
It's in process right now. I mean, we need to – there's some development funds that we're seeking to finish the development of these projects. But it can happen overnight and get the plants running within 3 years.
Again, Trey Davis with the Missouri Energy Development Association. Again, maybe same question I asked you before. Are you as bullish as Joe that this new technology will be in one of our states before too long?
I'm not as bullish as he is, and I think that's just from the fact of that's something that the companies that I represent, as they build their integrated resource plans every 3 years, as mandated by the Public Service Commission,
right,
and update that every year, that's not something that's built into those plans at this time. Does it mean it can't be there in the future? No, I think. But I think, as Joe alluded to, market forces haven't been where they've needed to be. And, you know, I would hope for the folks that are working on that, maybe in Kansas, hopefully those factors can be there. And I think that's what we have to look at with any of these new technologies, is the market force there where it can be cost competitive for the provider to provide it to the consumers. As great a technology as that may be, you know, you've known we've been working very hard to invest in small modular nuclear in this state and competing for federal grants. And while those haven't come our way, I still think that is a technology that I'm very bullish about the impact that it could have, a clean zero-emission resource that's much more cost competitive than traditional nuclear facilities, and something that that has been in use in other places. The technology is close, and I think that's something, you know, that can help our state. But I think with any of these technologies, we have to look at them with an open eye, and hopefully when the market forces bear true to the state, they can come in and make a difference.
Gentlemen, let's go to some phone calls here. Lots of folks want to chat about carbon emissions, the new standards from the Obama administration. Brad from Prairie Village, you're on Up to Date, Brad.
Hi there.
Hi.
Oh, by the way, if you're burning coal, the money goes to Nebraska and St. Louis because that's where the railroads and the guys that run the mines are based.
Okay.
One of the things that's bothering me is the, for example, at Holcomb, every time they come up with a design that meets current standards, the legislators have shot it down as being not good enough, and they're making it impossible to build anything when they're not allowing any standards to be set.
Joe, you want to respond to that, the Holcomb plant?
Well,
which the state just licensed, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, that, in my opinion, that plant makes no sense.
This is a new coal power plant in western Kansas, so controversial for so many years.
Yeah, yeah, there's been an ongoing battle about permitting it and denying the permits. But it does make sense financially. If you look at, there's a new coal plant being built in Mississippi, and it's a 500 megawatt coal plant. The cost for that coal plant is now over $5 billion. What the people in for Holcomb and Sunflower, the utility wants to get it built, are telling us is that they're going to build a coal plant almost twice the size of that plant in Mississippi for half the cost. Now, there's some math here that doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that really bothers me is what the resulting price of electricity would be from that Holcomb plant. It is going to be so expensive. You talk about raising prices for people, forget about it. Wind power is the low-cost price champion. You add energy storage, and it's going to come in at about one-fifth to one-sixth the price of electricity from a new coal plant.
If that's the case, then why aren't the utility involved with the Holcomb plant going with wind? I mean, what would compel them to go coal when you can go cheaper with wind?
It's because they're vertically integrated. That company is part owner of the coal mining operation in Wyoming. They are trying to sustain their profits from the coal mining operation too. And people need to understand that. People ask that question. They go, surely they must know something. They don't. They're just going after the profits from the coal mining operation.
Brad, thank you. Let's go to Jennifer from Westwood. Jennifer, you're on Up to Date. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I would first like to say that I am in full support of the new EPA recommendations. I think climate change is the most important issue that we have to face, and we have to do something for our children. I am curious where solar fits in this discussion. Hmm. We were one of the first families in Johnson County to use the net metering leasing program offered by KCP&L and Cromwell, and I will be happy to take my answer off the air.
How about solar, Joe Spies?
Solar is going to play an increasing role in energy distribution.
It's been slower to come along, though, hasn't it?
It has, because it's still expensive. Compared to the large-scale wind project, it's still pretty expensive, but the prices are coming down. Now, in Kansas, solar hasn't been received well in the state. It's some of the leasing programs that have come along are very creative, and I think that they're going to be successful if we can get prices in, especially the efficient production of solar from solar panels right now. They're still only about 20% efficient. That really needs to get to 40 or 50%, which might be decades away, before it's really competitive with large-scale wind power. But the advantages in carbon reduction are so important. Anybody who can afford solar is going to do it, because the payback is about 7 to 8 years when you factor in all the rebates, and that really isn't too bad for 40 years worth of energy production. Yeah. So I see solar increasing.
Trey Davis, where is solar in your mind, just briefly?
Solar is a part of the mix, I think, as all the other fuels. We look at nationally 2.8 gigawatts of solar. Utility-scaled solar has been installed by electric companies in 2013. That's up 58% from 2012. There's 26 gigawatts of utility-scale solar development under development right now. That's enough to power 4.3 million homes. You look just here in Missouri, Kansas City Power and Light on the western side of the state is putting solar panels on top of places like the Paseo Academy. They have a 120-panel solar system at Kauffman Stadium.
Yeah.
The Ameren, Missouri, has invested a great deal in building the state's largest utility-scale solar on the eastern side of the state. So I think as those prices come down and it makes more sense, especially on the utility scale size, I think you will see more and more solar. And also just to remind folks, for the last number of years, both Kansas City Power and Light and Ameren have put millions and millions of dollars into solar rebates for customers, and it's been a great success. Many people have taken advantage of that in our state, and that's been very beneficial. The challenge is that cost impact on customers has reached our cap following our state's renewable energy standard, so we're no longer able to offer those rebates like we were before.
Right.
But I think that shows that as the cost becomes more competitive, it makes sense. And I think that's our argument with anything that we're working on is as long as we can balance the fuel mix, deliver safe and reliable electricity to our customers, we will do that. And,
right.
and the key is making that affordable.
Jim from Kansas City, Missouri has a follow-up on solar. Jim, welcome.
Thank you. I support the EPA regulations. I would like to install solar panels on my house. I just attended a presentation about that over in Kansas last week. But I'm concerned that the Missouri legislature might be pressed to put surcharges onto my electric bill if I have solar panels, because ALEC apparently is trying to protect their coal people's profits by pushing legislatures to enact those surcharges. Could someone comment?
Jim's talking about the American Legislative Exchange Council, I believe it is, a conservative organization. You want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more strongly with Jim. What some of the utilities are doing is really punitive, and they're trying to suggest that people who are installing solar need to pay a tariff for using a part of the transmission grid. Now, this is ignoring the fact that these people are investing $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of their own money to help reduce
yeah.
stress for the utilities. That somehow got lost in the equation, and they're saying now they need an additional tariff for use of the grid, when in most cases right now most of these systems that are being built aren't necessarily grid tied. So this doesn't make any sense. It's very punitive, and it's not in the best interest of our economy or our environment.
We're going to have to leave our conversation there. Brian McTavish is here. He's ready to go. And when he's ready to go, we got to get there. I want to thank Joe Spies from the Kansas Sierra Club and Wind So High, and Trey Davis from the Missouri Energy Development Association. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your great insights. I appreciate it.